black thing go from left to right, and I thought, I'm going to die out here. No one's ever going to know.
And I couldn't believe what my eyeballs were showing me. I'll never forget how evil the eyes were. It was horrible. I mean, I've never seen nothing that evil.
It ran towards me at a rate that I can't even explain. Turned and stared at me. And this look of, I just want to kill you. I want to say it was human, but it wasn't.
He was yelling at me to grab a gun, grab a gun. I was like, for what? He said, just grab a gun. And there's footprints all the way to the door of my house. It had went inside my garage all the way to the door.
911, what are you reporting?
Jesus Christ, you better... Sure. See ya.
Hello?
Get somebody out here.
What's going on now, sir?
That son of a bitch is about 6'9", I don't know.
Do you see him now, sir?
Yes, I'm looking right at him.
Uh-oh.
You're listening to Sasquatch Chronicles. Check us out online at sasquatchchronicles.com. If you've had an encounter, email me. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. Welcome to the show, everyone. Thanks for being here tonight. Got a great show planned for you tonight. We're going to be talking to Winston, and Winston comes to us from Texas, and he had an encounter when he was out hunting. I believe it was back in 2010, and he stumbled up on one of these creatures looking in his deer blind, and he thought it was a guy in a ghillie suit at first, and the creature turned, and for a short period of time, they stood and looked at each other. A very scary account. And we're also going to be speaking to Pat. And Pat is a veteran of the military up there in Canada. And Pat had a very fascinating account over there in the Middle East. You know, I talked to a lot of veterans on and off the air. And I've had several people tell me about these weird black dogs they run into. And every veteran I've ever talked to, I said, do you think it was a real dog? And I will tell you, 99% of the time, they'll say no. Jet black dog, very large, seems to show up out of nowhere. And seems to leave as quickly as it shows up. And Pat will also be sharing some Sasquatch encounters with us up there in Ontario, including one when he was on a military base. If you've had an encounter and you'd like to be on the show, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. And if you get a chance, check out sasquatchchronicles.com. You can become a member and get additional shows. Let's jump into it tonight. I want to welcome Winston to the show. Winston, thanks for coming on.
No, thank you.
Yeah, I appreciate you being here. And I know you had quite the encounter down there in Texas. If you would, just kind of start from the beginning. Kind of tell us what you were doing and what happened.
The second Saturday of November, at about in between 3 and 3:30, I was going for a late hunt and was going to sit there until dark in my deer blind that was set up out in the woods on some land that we hunted on. And I headed out to go hunting after I loaded up my gun and get to the deer blind. And I always walked through the woods instead of taking a deer trail that you could follow. And it led to where you could just step off of that and go right into the deer blind in the back. But I didn't like taking that because if deer travel that, I didn't want them to smell me. So I would always walk right through the woods straight ahead and go to a fence line and then turn left and follow that to the deer blind. And as soon as I hit the woods, I smelt a smell that I can only describe it as a wet dog that had never known a bath mixed with a dead animal mixed with a porta can that has never been cleaned and it's filled with piss and crap all the way to the top of the rim of the commode. And it just, it was foul. And I was, because I figured it might be a dead animal and it would screw up my hunt that day, I was looking for it as I was walking through the woods. And I could, I mean, I would stop and be, Jesus, what is that smell, looking around, and I could never find it. I just kept going and kept going, and I got to the fence line and then took the left and started following the fence line. And I was probably, I want to say 50 or 60 yards from the, from where you step into the woods to get in, because the deer blind was, I mean, between the fence and the woods, there was like a 5 or 6 foot spread of just a clear patch. And just you would have to step maybe 3 steps into the woods and to get to the deer blind. And I was probably 50 or 60 yards from it, and it looked like somebody was bent over and looking through the window, had their head in my deer blind of the window of the deer blind. And in my head, I thought, well, my dad's here. I didn't see his car. And I walked about 10 more yards, and I said, no, that's a big guy. That's got to be some another hunter. So I popped my gun off a safe, and I took maybe 10 more yards, 15 more yards, and got closer and said, no, that's somebody in a ghillie suit. In my head, I'm saying this. And I get a little bit closer, and I said, no, that's some dummy in a Bigfoot suit, and that's a good way to get shot by somebody like me. And about that time, I was probably between 25 to 35 yards from it, and it either heard me or smelt me, and he pulled his head out of the tent and stood straight up, and that shocked me and froze me right where I stood. And I was trying in my head to figure out whether it was a guy in a Bigfoot suit or a real Bigfoot. And I mean, before 2 years before Andre the Giant died, I ran into him in Abilene, Texas, coming out of the kettle. So I've met Andre the Giant before, and he was 7'6". He was a big guy, and whatever this was made him look like a little guy. So they don't make people that big, and I could see the muscles underneath its fur flexing and working. I could see, you know, any time it breathed, I could see underneath its fur moving. So I knew dead gum well it wasn't somebody in a suit. That was something real. That was a real creature. And we probably stared at each other for what seemed like forever to me, but it was probably about 10-15 seconds, and I didn't move. I was frozen. So it stomped the ground and did a grunt growl like, ugh. And when it did that, I bet you I jumped about a foot in the air, but I stayed frozen in fright and fear. And when it did that, from the distance it was away, the only way I can describe this is like a lion. When it roars, you can feel it reverberate in your body, in your chest, and that's what it did. And it kept me frozen in fright, and I didn't move, so it just turned around and walked away from me and literally stepped over a barbed wire fence, just pushed it down a little bit with its hand and looked back over its shoulder at me, kind of like the Patty did in the Patterson-Gimlin footage. And then it walked across a field, and halfway across a field, it looked back again at me. And when it got to the other side, there was another barbed wire fence, but there was trees going across that one, and it stepped over that barbed wire fence between a couple of trees that was maybe 5 or 6 inches in diameter. And when it reached up to use that as a brace, kind of like a human would, but instead of grabbing it like a human would with its thumb upwards, it didn't wrap its thumb around the tree. like a monkey, it reached up and had the thumb pointing down, and with all of its fingers, thumb and all, it grabbed the tree, looked back at me, and stepped into the woods, and it was like it disappeared, like it was magic. It just vanished, and I didn't smell it no more, nothing.
Yeah, that's terrifying, man. That's terrifying to be that close with something so big. And what did you think, before we talk about, you know, descriptions and everything, what did you think about the whole topic of Sasquatch part of this?
I was on the fence about it. As a kid, I seen the Patterson-Gimlin footage, and that was pretty compelling to me, because when you watch that, I mean, you can see the shoulder blades moving and the muscles and stuff. So in my head, they existed, but I had never seen one before that day. And that was the turning point. I am no longer a believer. I am a knower of Bigfoot.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, if you would, for the audience listening, can you kind of describe when he turned and looked at you, can you kind of describe for the audience what you saw?
Oh, yeah. We stood and looked at each other without any woods or anything in between us for at least 15 seconds. I can tell you exactly what he looks like. Their face, I want to say the Harry and the Hendersons Bigfoot is close, but it's not exact. Their face isn't as monkey looking as Harry's face. They look more Neanderthal. It had a beard like a man. It had a mustache, but what it didn't have was a round head. It had a cone-shaped head like a gorilla's, and its shoulder muscles that connect to the bottom of our neck doesn't connect to the bottom of their neck. It connects to the back of their skulls like a gorilla, so it makes it look like it don't have a neck. And this thing was jacked like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I mean, you could see the muscles underneath and the sheer body mass of this thing. I mean, I'm a 5'8", 5'9", guy, and I weigh about 155 to 165 pounds. And I mean, this thing's legs were as big as my torso or bigger. I mean, this thing was huge. It was, I work commercial construction too, so it was at least between 9 and 12 feet tall, somewhere in there. I mean, it was a big guy. And yes, it was a guy. I could see its genitals through the fur. When it walked away, I could see its muscles moving. I could literally see when it stepped and walked, I could see the mid-tarsal break in its foot, halfway up its foot. It like your toes bend when you step, its foot in the middle of its foot bends.
Did the expression on the face change? Obviously, when it grunted, but as you were looking,
oh yeah, you could tell that it was startled at first when it looked at me, but it tried to present itself as it wasn't afraid, and it scowled at me a little bit, and I didn't move. So it stomped the ground and grunt growled at me. And when it did, I mean, it had an evil look on its face when it did. I almost bolted, but I figured like an animal, it might make it chase you, you know? So I didn't, I just stayed frozen. Its color was a reddish brown, like an orangutan on its back, and on its shoulders, it was a little bit darker, like a blackish color. Its arms long and they go to like their knees, man. Their arms are long.
Yeah, one question I want to ask you, and I don't mean to gross the audience out, but as far as its sexual member, you know, a lot of times when you look at like gorillas, they're built, they're tiny, especially in the men. You'd think they'd be a lot bigger on like a gorilla or something like that, but they're not. And I was just curious, would you say it's equal to like, I know this sounds like a weird question, so forgive me. Would you say it's like equal to like a man, or would you say it was smaller, or would you say it was bigger?
There's a lot of hair down there, so I would say it was at least in between the size of a human's and a gorilla's to the same like ours would be. I mean, it's right around in between, either in between or the same size. There was a lot of hair, so you can't really tell, but it sure as heck wasn't gorilla size. Yeah, gorillas are tiny genitals because the females are way smaller.
Yeah, and I don't mean to go off on that. It's just curious when people actually see the genitals, I'm curious on what people are seeing. I don't know why. Maybe because when I see like a gorilla, anyway, I'll change the topic.
It's all right.
it makes you wonder, do you think it was your deer blind set up for a long period of time, or had you just put it up?
Oh, no, it had been set up for since September. We always set our deer blinds up prior to the hunt so the animals get used to them. And actually, 2 days prior, I was in the blind, and around 10 o'clock in the morning, a buck was chasing a doe. They were coming towards the fence line that I walked down. There was a spot in the field where the deer, we set it up there because you could get a shot at deer coming over the deer blind. And I thought to myself, you know, when this buck jumps over this fence, I'm going to plug him. And the doe jumped over the fence. And as soon as it hit this side of the fence, it immediately jumped to the right over that fence that the Sasquatch through the trees jumped through, and the buck come over chasing her. But as soon as his front hooves touched the ground, I mean, he immediately jumped back over the fence line and took off. And I unzipped the tent and got out to get a shot because I seen him stop. And I pulled up my gun to get a shot, but when I did, I was looking at him, and he wasn't looking at me. It was looking past me. So I literally just put my gun down and turned around and was trying to figure out what the hell spooked it, but I could never see it. And to this day, I think that Sasquatch was there watching, but I never could see him.
Yeah, the behavior is really fascinating to me. It's almost like this thing was curious to see if you were in that little deer blind or not, yeah. And he wasn't paying attention to his surroundings.
Yeah, a couple of days after that, when I walked up on it, I think that it was checking to see if I was in there, and I wasn't in there, so it stuck its head. I'm just speculating this, but, you know, being curious, I think once it realized that I wasn't in there, it stuck his head in there and was looking to see what was in there, because we left candy bars and stuff in there, you know.
The creature, too, you know, it didn't attack. How it was almost like a warning, like you see guys in bars that want to pick a fight. They always puff their chest out, and they usually tend to run their mouths, but they're the last guys to do anything. And the Sasquatch kind of, I know it's a bad comparison, the Sasquatch kind of reminds me of that, because it kind of did like a jerky motion towards you, stomped and growled, and you didn't leave, so it decided to leave. Thank God.
Yeah, I think he was bluffing me, but then again, and I had a gun with me is what drives me crazy. Now, if I could turn back time, I would have tried to shoot it. But at that time, I was trying to go through my head, trying to figure out whether it was a person, because it looked so human-like in the face, or whether it was a creature. But I mean, now I know, and it's not like I want to go out and kill the species, but and we have, since that time, I have really gotten into watching Sasquatch documentaries and stuff. And I mean, it's like we have DNA evidence that they won't recognize because it's so human-like. We have hair that they won't recognize. We have footprints that they won't acknowledge. We have hair samples that they won't acknowledge. And to me, what we need, the only way you're going to get them to believe anything is if you bring one down to validate the species.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you on that, if you can get it in. But I tend to agree with you. I think that one should be shot. And I think that in a safe way, and I mean safe for you, not for it. And I think with, you know, like Grover Krantz, the late Grover Krantz, his whole take was one should be shot and brought in. And people used to argue with him all the time. Well, what if, you know, it's an endangered species? And he said, if we kill one and bring it in, and that destroys the species, well, they're already in trouble, you know, and so there's no sense in... And these things have been shot. I've talked to hunters who've shot them. But you have to be careful with that, because even though I tend to think that they travel in groups, not necessarily, maybe not together side by side, but if you see one, there's probably two or three others nearby.
You know. Yeah, I've watched some documentaries, and it seems to be that they have family groups that they travel in. And I'm kind of glad that I didn't raise my gun, because, you know, I was looking at this thing, but who's to say there wasn't one right there in the woods watching me?
Yeah, and I think that's what you have to... There seems to be a revenge streak in these things, and you hear a lot of accounts like that. What part of Texas did this happen? And you don't have to give the exact location. Was it East Texas, or was it...
It was right around... outside of Austin. It was in Central Texas. I lived in a county called Bastrop County, and we hunted on some land way outside in a region called Muldoon. And I actually can describe how to get there. You go down the highway that, if you're leaving Smithville, where the new high school was built, and you're going, I guess, towards San Antonio region south, you hit this road called Zapalack Road, and you turn on that, and you drive down that until it turns dirt road, and then there was another dirt road called Jones Road, and we would turn left on that and go all the way down until that road ends, and on the right there was land. I mean, you're so far out that it and it's rural that I mean, you're literally in the woods.
Did you ever go back hunting after this incident? Do you ever go back to that area?
No, I didn't. Not only not go back to that area, I stopped hunting. I hunted since I was a kid. Like, my dad took me hunting since I was 5 years old, and that day, that was the end of my hunting. I haven't hunted since. I gave the woods to the master of the woods.
Yeah, it kind of turns your world upside down, doesn't it?
Yeah, I didn't even go back and get the blind. I mean, that was it. We left it. My dad was pissed too, boy. He was like, "You didn't go get that blind?" No. Why not? Because I never told him that I ran into it. But I was just, no, I'll get another one, you know. I never went back and got it.
Yeah, I hear you. What do you think that they are? What's your opinion, Winston, as far as what these things are?
That's a tricky question. Because I actually am coming to a conclusion that they are what we haven't. They are an unevolved branch of what we are. I think that we come from at least a cousin of what they are. I think they are a naturally evolving upright primate. And if we evolve from an upright primate, I think that the ones that we evolve from are of a smaller sect of them. And because they look so human, it's ungodly in the face.
Yeah, and there's no wrong answer to that question. I mean, and no one really knows. I'm always just kind of curious on what people think. So you think it leans more towards human on the family tree? Is that kind of what you're saying?
Oh, yeah. I guarantee you it's a cousin, at least.
Yeah, you could be right. You could be right about your theory. And like I said, there's no wrong answer. A lot of people, you know, they will say it like up here in the Pacific Northwest, a lot of people will say it looked more gorilla-like. It had the human nose. It had there was parts of it that were not human, that were more animal-like. And then you do get the reports of people who say it looked more like a chimpanzee in the face. It had the human nose, it had big black eyes. And then sometimes you do run into a lot of people that say it looked human. I've heard exactly what you said. Had it looked like a man's face, but on an animal's body, is what a lot of people say.
It's got a big brow, so like a Neanderthal's, and its nose is more human-like than primate, but it's wider, and it's got bigger nostrils. But I mean, it could have been because there was a lot of the beard and the mustache of it, to where I couldn't see the primate looking, you know, bottom part of its face. But to me, it just looked more Neanderthal in the face, but its body structure looks primate. I mean, its arms are longer than a human's. It's built more primate. Its shoulder muscles connect to the back of its skull. It's got the cone head. I mean, we're primate. We're on the primate tree. I don't see it when I look at a human. I think we are a perversion of some sort, because you can line all the primates in the world up and they all look like they belong together. And if you were to put a Sasquatch in that mix, it looks like it belongs on the primate family tree. When you put a human in that mix, we don't jive.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I can't disagree with that. One question I want to ask you, did it show its teeth?
I mean, I was 35 yards away, but yeah, when it grunt growled at me, it kind of snarled. It squinted its nose up. Yeah, I guess I could see its teeth a little bit. I can't tell. I mean, I can't definitively say what they looked, because it was 35, 40 yards. Well, 25 or 35 yards away, but yeah, it had teeth.
Yeah, and it just shows the intelligence of these things, you know, to, like you said earlier, kind of bluff you, you know, and sometimes I wonder if they do that to see what you're going to do. And I think if you make the wrong mistake, you're going to pay for it. I think the fact that, and luckily us as humans, when we become terrified, people freeze. When you have real fear, people freeze. And I think it throws these things off, because they're like, okay, he's not really running. He's not really doing anything. I'm just going to leave. But it shows that it was still keeping an eye on you as it walked off. I would kind of step back and look in your direction to make sure you weren't following it.
Yeah. Yeah. It terrified me. I've never been scared in my life like that. That was a once in a lifetime ordeal. I mean, it put my heart in my throat. It scared the crap right out of me to the point where I don't hunt no.
Yeah, and I hate to hear that. It's kind of a shame. I'm with you on that, though, because, you know, these things are out there, and it makes you a little concerned. Maybe the next one won't bluff you. It'll actually come for you.
Yeah, especially in Texas. They seem to be a little bit more aggressive than the tree-hugging Oregon Sasquatch.
Yeah, I'm not so sure the Oregon ones are tree-hugging, you know, loving your forest brothers either, but I tend to agree with you. I think in Texas, they seem to be more pissed. And I would be more pissed, too, if I had to live out in those woods, man. It's brutal out there in the summertime, and everything wants to kill you.
In Texas, I think that they're just – they've been pushed out of their habitat so much because the population of humans are growing that they're having to rely on living in swamps and way away from – way out in the middle of nowhere. And I think they end up interbreeding. That's why you see some in Texas that have three toes and messed up feet and stuff. But that's just a speculation from the observations of the documentaries that I've seen since my encounter.
Yeah, I hear you. Well, I appreciate it, Winston. I mean, it was quite the encounter. And, you know, when you're toe-to-toe with one of these things, it's an eye-opener. It'll turn your world upside down. But I really appreciate you coming on and, and sharing what happened to you.
Oh yeah. For the first year and a half to 2 years, I wouldn't tell anybody about it. But now, I mean, I've gotten to the point where, you know, I'm not afraid to tell the truth about what I saw. I mean, I know what I saw. I've been hunting since I was a little kid, and I'm not going to lie about it. If somebody wants to know, I'm going to tell them, whether they call me a liar or not. Man, well, you think I'm a liar, you go out in the woods, and a lot of people tell me, you know, they don't exist. I've never seen one, and I'm like, yeah, do you hunt? Well, yeah, I hunt, really? Well, let me ask you this. How often do you see a bobcat or a mountain lion? Well, I've never seen one. That's right, because they're elusive.
Yeah, so true. So true. Well, I appreciate it, Winston.
Yes, sir. I appreciate you letting me tell it.
And before we bring on Pat on the show, I want to thank the sponsor, Duke Cannon. Duke Cannon, thank you so much for sponsoring Sasquatch Chronicles. They got a cool item for a limited time. The Moderate Self-Improvement Box is usually $84. Now $50 for a limited time. And it comes with 7 different items in there. Everything to take care of your hair, your hands, face cleaner, cologne, all kinds of cool stuff. One of the items I love the most, I've said it a million times, is that Bourbon Solid Cologne. One of my favorite items that Duke Cannon offers. This is a one-time offer, not a subscription box, and it's just $50 with free shipping to the lower 48 states. All of Duke Cannon's products are tested by active duty military, and 5% of the profits are donated to causes benefiting veterans and active duty military. Duke Cannon prides itself in making its grooming goods work as hard as you do. Check out DukeCannon.com and don't forget to use the promo code Sasquatch to get 15% off your entire order. That's DukeCannon.com and don't forget to use the promo code Sasquatch to get 15% off your order. Get a feeling that I never, 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 never had. Well, I want to welcome Pat to the show. Pat, thanks for coming on.
Oh, it's an honor to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the honor is mine. And I know you're a veteran. And I know you've actually had a few Sasquatch encounters out there in Ontario. One of the things I wanted to start with was in Afghanistan and these black dogs. Because I do have a military audience that does listen. And I've had a lot of military guys tell me strange stories about these black dogs. So if you would, tell us about what happened in Afghanistan.
Oh, gee. Well, I was out in Forward Operating Base, a FOB, up north of Kandahar City, probably about an hour and a half. I forget which province it was in at this time. It was like right on the cusp of the border between different districts and different provinces. But we're out there. I was with the I was working with the refueling section with that were detached to help the engineers rebuild this forward operating base. And so our refueler had been like dug into the earthworks, like basically dug a big hole and then it's backed in type thing. And then just off to the rear, to the right, like the driver's side of the vehicle, we had our own little makeshift shelter, you know, 3 mounds of dirt around us with a impromptu canvas over top of us when we had 2 cots in there. And the space is a small area. It's about maybe 10 feet square, the shelter. And so I remember one night we were out there and I was lying there and my rifle was laying beside me on the ground on the ground sheet. And my pistol was, I always have it tucked up underneath my pillow. In the middle of the night, I wake up to something making noise at just outside the entrance of our shelter. So I look down at my feet and there's this huge freaking dog right at the foot of my cot. Like it's like within like a foot of my feet. And this thing stood about, I'd say three and a half feet at the shoulder. And it was actually going through our garbage bag that we had we hadn't had time to bring out to for disposal from that day. And so I looked down at it, and I just got this feeling of, oh, shit, this is not good. Because I'd never seen anything like that. Like, I've seen other dogs in Afghanistan, but they're, like, just – they're nothing compared to the size of this thing. And it was jet black. Like, the desert gets dark at night, but this thing was darker than dark. Like, I can't really explain it. Almost like – I've heard stories of how some people have Sasquatch encounters where they say the darkness of it kind of absorbs the light. Yeah. I guess that's basically the best way I could describe it. And so I slowly reached up to grab my pistol, because if I would have rolled over to grab my rifle, I knew, like, I wouldn't have time to grab it. So I just, you know, slowly reached up, raised my pillow, grabbed my pistol, and I slowly brought it down, and I'm still rummaging through, and then I'm looking down the sights of my pistol at this thing and going, you know what, this pistol's not going to do anything to that thing. And our service pistols up here in Canada are 9mm, so I'm thinking, no, this thing is not doing anything to this animal. And then I guess it noticed my movement or whatever, and just this growl, like, how can I best describe it? Like deep in his chest, like I've heard dogs growl, but this is very, very deep. And then I saw the flash of white teeth, and I'm like, how the hell is this possible? Like, this thing's so black, it's pitch black outside, how the hell am I seeing its teeth? Like, and like, they weren't small teeth at all either. And so, yeah, so I just kind of like put my pistol down. I'm like, you know what, I'm done. Like, if this thing wants me, it's got me. There's nothing I can do. And my fire team partner, in the States, you guys call it battle buddies. They're laying on the cot beside me about 4 feet to my side. And they were fast asleep. They didn't even know what the hell was going on. I'm thinking, oh, man, like, we're done. And we're in the middle of the working area. And we have all-around defense on this FOB. And we also had, like, observation posts set up around the area on high ground. So I don't know how the hell this thing got in. Into the FOB. It was crazy.
So what did you do next?
I just laid there and I looked at it, and then I closed my eyes, and I was just praying. I was reaching out to God. I'm going, you know what, big guy, let us stick around a bit longer, would you? Because this thing is like, wow. I thought for sure we were goners. And I just closed my eyes and just prayed and prayed and prayed. And then I'd say 10, 15 minutes later, I didn't even hear this thing leave. I opened up my eyes and the thing was gone.
Can I ask you, what do you think it was? Do you think it was actually a real dog, or do you think it was, I mean, what's your opinion on as far as what it was?
It had the appearance of a dog, like a very large dog. Like I said, it stood three and a half feet at the shoulder, and, you know, had long dark fur, and definitely canine teeth. There was no eye shine or eye glow because there was no ambient light where we were. It was some type of creature. I don't know. Like, it looked like it was a quadruped. So I didn't even hear this thing leave.
Yeah, I don't know what that is. You know, like I said, I've talked to many soldiers who've seen this thing, and it's very close to your description. I mean, they describe it as bigger than your average dog and jet black. That's the two things I hear a lot. And I remember one guy, he was in a tank. You and I were just talking about this before we went on the air. He was in a tank, and this was in Iraq. And they were out in the middle of the desert. It's the middle of the night. And I think that they saw them. I don't remember how they saw them. I think it was with the night vision. And these three dogs showed up. And that's the other thing I've heard a lot, where they show up in groups of three or sometimes just one. But they're jet black, they're big, and they kind of surrounded the tank. And, you know, one of the infantrymen told me, he goes, you know, we run into dogs out here all the time. I mean, they run around, and it's just a different culture regarding dogs. But he goes, this thing, I don't know what this thing was. So it makes me wonder. And then I've heard other soldiers tell me that it's a djinn. I don't know if they have that. They probably have that in Afghanistan.
Yeah, I've heard of that in Afghanistan, the djinn.
Yeah.
They're talking with the locals through the interpreters.
Yeah, and I've heard that they're the djinn. These dogs are the djinn. But they're weird, and they grab guys' attention because, A, I think of the size, and then, B, everyone I talk to, and there's been guys that have seen them in the middle of the day and say they're jet black, they're really fast, they tend to just show up and tend to just disappear. Makes you wonder what that thing is.
Oh, yeah, definitely, because I know, like, as soon as I realized it was gone, right away, in a loud whisper, I got my my fire team partner up, and I said, cover me, I got to check something out. So he grabbed his rifle, and I grabbed mine, and when I pulled out my my red light, because we don't use any white light in theater, and I could see no tracks. The dirt was very, you could see tracks. If you would walk, you would see your tracks. Like, it wasn't like it was hard pack dirt. It was very soft and malleable. But our garbage was completely strewn all over about 3-4 feet around the garbage bag. And that was the only evidence that it was there.
Yeah, so strange. Did you talk to anyone else about this besides your battle buddy or whatever you guys call it, your partner? Did you tell anyone about this encounter?
Oh, hell no. Who the hell is going to believe you? it was the first time I seen it, and I hadn't heard anybody else from the battle group who had seen it. And I had, I had friends all over the battle group, and nobody said anything to me. And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, it is fascinating. I'd love to know what it is, because, like I said, I've talked to 24 veterans that have seen it. And every time I ask them, do you think it was a real dog? Just a big dog you ran into. I haven't had one person tell me that they thought it was a real dog. They won't say what they think it is, but they'll say, I think it was more of an entity, or I don't think it was a dog. And it's weird it takes that form over there as a dog. Because, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say something like that. I mean, we have dog men and that sort of thing. I'll get reports of that. But this sounds like a hybrid dog, spirit, entity that just seems to show up.
Oh, this thing was on all fours. Like, it did not walk bipedally. It was on all fours. Like I said, at the shoulder, it was 3.5 feet tall. And then, probably tapered off maybe 4 or 5 inches towards the rear haunch.
Can I ask you, was there anything else you saw over in Afghanistan that was just odd? I know it's kind of a weird question, but was there anything else that you saw over there that stood out to you?
Not really. Not that comes to mind. I'd probably, after I got the phone with you, I'll probably think of something. But
yeah.
No, off the top of my mind, that's the only thing that really stood out for me. I was completely flabbergasted by this thing. Like, it was, wow, just crazy.
Yeah, I hear you. I would have been too. It's strange that it left physical evidence. And I've heard that too. Not so much tracks, but, getting into garbage or doing what you would think a dog would do. But again, everyone I've talked to doesn't think it's a physical dog.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, I'm thinking, okay, well, it went through the garbage. Why are there no damn tracks? There was nothing. just our boot prints from the night before.
That's so strange. Well, tell me about your, I know that we're going to talk about three encounters. Did all of them happen in Ontario?
One happened on a training base here in Ontario. The other two were on the Quebec side.
Okay. Well, let's kind of go in chronological order. I know one of them happened when you were very young. Kind of tell us what you were doing and what happened.
Oh, so as I was growing up out in the country, I must have been about 12, maybe 13 at the time. I'm 43 now, so I used to go during the summer. I used to go pick dew worms up in the farmer's fields up on the other side of the Canadian Shield. Like, that's, you know, worn down mountains in the eastern part of Canada. So I was going up and over this one, you know, quote unquote mountain to go to the farmer's field on the other side, you know, because I'd pick the dew worms and I'd sell them on the side of the road for people coming in and out, you know, going fishing and whatnot. So I was on my way up and I heard, like, I noticed everything was like just really quiet. And then I heard like this really, really weird sound. Like, it was like, I don't know if you've had anybody relate this sound to you. It was like, how's it go? It's like a pew, pew, that kind of like that kind of sound. But more elongated, like a pew type thing. It sounded really weird. And I was like, what the hell is that? So then I got this sense of like, I had to hide. Like, I had to like find cover. And so there just happened to be a down log right there and crouched down behind it. And then within 10, 15 minutes, the feeling completely subsided. And I just turned around and went back home. So I know that there's been reports of UFOs up in that area. I've been told Sasquatch are up in that area. So I don't know what it could have been.
Yeah, strange. I know sometimes with a lot of Sasquatch encounters, you'll hear people say, you know, what I heard was kind of mechanical.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah, mechanical.
Yeah. And you'll hear that a lot. I've heard that here mainly in the States a lot, where eyewitnesses will say, yeah, it didn't sound, you know, it sounded mechanical. It didn't sound like an animal. And the longer they stick around, the more it turns into like a roar or a scream or something like that. But a lot of people say mechanical. That's fascinating. How old were you when that happened?
I was about 12 or 13. And you know what? Mechanical sounds like the best description, because it was almost like a computerized mechanical type sound. Like, I don't know, like it. And at the time, I'm 12 years old, so that's like 30 years ago. So, you know, you didn't really have anything except for your, you know, Sony Discman, or not even a Sony Discman. You had your little Walkman or your little ghetto blaster, but, you know, nothing out in the bush is going to make that noise. And that bush is, it's mixed forest, but it's mainly coniferous. So a lot of pines, a lot of cedar.
It's strange that you get that fear of you had to hide. You know, that's kind of a telling sign right there, as opposed to just hearing some weird mechanical noise and going about your business. How many years later did your second encounter happen?
My second encounter happened in 98 when I was doing some training with the Canadian Army at a base here in Ontario. It was weird because I was out on a reconnaissance patrol with three other guys, and we went and did our reconnaissance part, and we're on the way back to the vehicle to get, you know, extracted out of the area. And on the way, I was the rear guy in the patrol, and I could hear something following us, you know. And yeah, there's bear, there's fox, you know, you name the kind of animals, they have them out there. And this is dead of the night. So I'm like, okay, visibility is like next to nothing. So then I tapped the guy on the shoulder in front of me and I said, pass up, we're being followed. And then so we stopped and the section commander was like, what do you mean we're being followed? I'm like, we're being followed. And he's like, okay. He goes, keep an ear and let me know if you hear anything else. And the next thing you know, it's kind of like flanking us. It's on the side as we're, you know, walking out of the bush. And so he stops. He's like, you guys hear that? And we're like, yeah. So he's like, okay. So this is what we're going to do. He goes, get your magazines ready. He goes, we're going to do what the Canadian Army does for breaking contact when you're a small force. I'm not going to use the term because I don't know how, if I want to say any kind of formations that we use over the radio. So it's a technique that we use in the Canadian Army to break contact with a larger force. And he was, you know, this is what we're going to do. And where we're running is that way. And he directed us. So he goes, you guys, as we're running, you don't stop. You just keep going that way. Next thing you know, he's on the radio. We're doing our business, shooting and doing whatever we got to do. And he's on the radio saying, you better be there when we get there because we got to go now. And that's what he said over the radio. I don't know what the response was because I couldn't hear him. And there's also, that's the first time I smelt almost like a swamp, a musky odor. I don't know if that makes any sense to you. It wasn't like nothing rotted or anything like that. It was like a musty, swampy odor. And so, yeah, and that was my second encounter.
Let me ask you, did you guys ever talk about it afterwards? Like, what the hell was following us?
We did ask. I said, what the hell was that? He goes, oh, it was just a bear. But I'm thinking, okay, well, if it was a bear, it would have made more noise if it was following us because or flanking us. Because bears don't typically flank somebody, to the best of my knowledge. I could be mistaken.
No, just you're right.
Just in my personal experience.
Yeah, it's not a predator. A predator normally doesn't do that. Most known predators don't. If they're going to come for you, they're going to come for you. You're in big trouble. You know, they're not going to sit and play games with you.
Yeah. Well, however, cougars will flank you and will get in front of you to do stuff, but that's a cougar, right? That's not a bear.
Yeah, and you probably would have never heard a cougar. They're exactly. Pretty quiet.
Yeah.
And you hear, you know, what's fascinating about that, Patrick, is, you know, out here in like Washington State, we have Fort Lewis, and you'll hear a lot of similar type encounters, what you just told. You'll hear a lot of guys talk about that on the base, and it's a huge base. I mean, you could get lost on that base. There's so much land. But you'll hear a lot of guys repeat that encounter to where they're out there 3, 4, 5, 10 guys, and they're being followed through the woods and they can't figure out what's following them. And, you know, it's not a hunter. A hunter's not going to be out there on the base following these guys.
Oh, no, definitely not, because that's all restricted area, right?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And
the base I was on training, it's a pretty big base, too. Like, it's you know, right along the Ottawa River. So it's a pretty significant training area.
I love those type encounters, especially from military guys. And did you guys have live ammo or was it blanks?
No, we were using blanks because we were in the training area. And so we were just making as much noise as possible to get out of there.
Yeah, that's got to be a little unnerving to have blanks in a situation like that. Yeah,
it's kind of like, oh, shit, a bear's coming. Okay, quick fix. You know, fix bayonets.
Yeah, fix bayonets and let's go in. Especially with the size of bears, you guys have grizzlies up that way, don't you?
No, not in Ontario. We have them more out towards the west coast, up in the mountains.
Oh, I gotcha.
Alberta and BC.
So it's mainly black bear.
Yeah, black brown bear.
Yeah, Yeah, and for the most part, they're skittish. I mean, they generally don't want an altercation with you. That's been my experience with most black bears anyway. They're just gone. The minute they get a whiff of you, they're gone.
Exactly. As soon as they're like, what the hell is that? Unless you're like between the mother and his cubs, they're not coming anywhere near you.
Yeah, and the other thing too, I don't think it was a cougar, but a cougar generally, they're pretty smart. You know, a cougar will go after a small child, maybe a small woman. Several guys hiking through the woods, I don't see a cougar picking that fight. They're too smart for that.
Well, exactly, right? And like their night sight is, you know, superior to ours to begin with. So they can see there's four grown men, you know, it's not going to really be a pick off all of us at once without getting hurt itself, because no predator is going to put itself in a position there that they may get injured, because that's certain death in the wild.
Yeah, I agree with you. Well, tell me about your last encounter. When did this happen, Pat? So the last one was 98. And when was this next one?
This last one was about, I'd say about maybe three years ago, give or take. I was camping on an island I usually go to. It's deep water all around. You know, there's a small island not too far off the northern tip of it. If you're wearing water shoes, you could probably traverse it. But, you know, it's pretty rocky and whatnot and weedy and whatnot. So I usually go camping out there, and I've been going camping there for, over 20 years. And so I got a nice little niched out area there and landscaped it and terraformed it just the way I like it. And I've gone there with, you know, my dog countless times, gone there with, you know, my brothers camping, friends camping. And then a few years ago, I had my two dogs. I have two Belgian Malinois. And the youngest one, I was sitting by the fire, just, you know, drinking my beer and having a smoke. And then I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to get up and go grab another beer. And as I stand up, my youngest, he gets up, he just automatically, his ears go right up, you know, right back on his head, and just like very, very deep growl and a snarl. And then just a very deep bark. And for him to do that, it's unheard of. He's not that type of dog to do that. So I'm like, what is it? What is it, Buster? And I'm like, what do you see, buddy? So I'm looking through, and on the other side, I keep a propane lantern lit in my camping area, but it's just on low light just so I can see to go back and forth to the tent, to the fire pit. And on the far side of my campsite, I see this really big, dark silhouette, but it's just at the edge of the light, just outside the light. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And so my machete was, you know, stuck in a log beside my tent. So I picked that up, like, so I grabbed that, and, you know, that, again, I got that fear of, like, you know, something's not right. Like, this doesn't feel, felt very, very uneasy. And, you know, for me to sleep with a weapon in my tent on that island is unheard of. Like, I never do it. But I tell you, that night, I slept with my machete right by my side. Like, I had like that much, you know, fear, I guess you could say.
Did your dog stop kind of growling after a while? Or do you think the thing was around whatever was outside your campsite? Do you think it was there for a while?
Yeah, I think it was. I could hear, you know, the odd branch or twig snap up on the hill that is backing on my campsite. And but every time there would be a crack, my youngest, again, he'd do that deep guttural growl. And he'd always face exactly which direction, you know, that noise came from. And I was like, so I'm like, oh man, this is not good. Because up here in Canada, we don't have concealed carry or open carry. So we don't really go camping with weapons at all up here, unless it's like a machete or a knife.
Yeah, that's a little terrifying, to be honest.
Yeah, especially when you see something that, you know, and I'd say like this shadow was about, easily 7.5 feet high.
Was it the silhouette of like a man, or was it, I mean, what, when you say silhouette, what?
It was like a humanoid silhouette, I guess a man, you know. I could see the outline of the shoulders, but it was just really dark. And like I said, just outside the light, like I could just see enough, but I just couldn't see enough to get any real detail.
I get you. I understand. And so I'm assuming whatever this creature left after a period of time.
Yeah, it must have, because, you know, because back that way is that's where I have my cubicle toilet set up. So it's a pretty cleared out area. So it could have like turned around and walked out and I wouldn't even heard it.
Did you leave the next day? Were you like, let's go, Buster, let's get the hell out of here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I would have too.
I'm like, you know what? Captain Chisora's boys.
Yeah.
Copper, Buster, get in the canoe. Let's go.
Yeah. I hear you. Have you been back to that area since this happened?
I have, and nothing felt weird after that. It was just that one night. It was really weird, and that's the first time I felt like that on the island. Like I was being watched. That there was another presence there on the island.
I hear you. Well, one question I want to ask you, and I ask everyone, what do you think Sasquatch is? What's your own personal opinion?
See, you know, I thought I'd come up with like this really cool answer to that question because I listen to your podcast all the time. But, you know, I really don't know. I think it is a creature. I'd say maybe a cross between like a primate and a human, just because of the stature, the way it stands up. Even gorillas, primates, they don't, you know, walk around forever on 2 feet. They do walk on 2 feet, mind you, but not for, you know, a long period of time.
I hear you. And so you think it's more of probably an animal? Is that kind of what you mean when you say that? Or
yeah, an animal. Yeah, just a, you know, an animal that we haven't yet discovered, or, you know, we have no proof of yet. We've discovered them, just no proof.
Yeah, no, I understand. Well, be careful while you're out there, man, going to that island. You know, it doesn't sound like it really wanted any sort of altercation with you. And you hear a lot of accounts like that. I mean, I've had many on the show. I've talked to many off the air, very similar type encounters where it's just outside of the light. You can't quite make out facial details. You can't quite make, you just, it looks like you said, humanoid and large. And they tend to, almost like a stalker, like stalk you while you're at a campsite. They're going to sit and watch you.
Yeah, almost. It's almost like they're curious, like, you know, what the hell are you doing over there type thing? Like, what are you doing in my bush type thing, you know?
Yeah, and I always tell people, too, your dog will usually, any dog will usually let you know when these things are around. They'll react like Buster reacted. I mean, you take the sweetest dog on the planet, and then when these things show up, they'll freeze, they'll growl, they'll snarl, and it's out of character for a lot of dogs. But most dogs do react that way. So I know people get mad when I say take your dogs, but I would take your dogs because they'll let you know when they're in the area.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and any dog that, you know, if they're part of your, you know, family group, will let you know if there's anything amiss out in the out camping or out in the forest, because they're going to be protective. They're a pack animal, right? So they're going to want to protect their owner.
Yeah, I agree with you. Let me know if anything else happens while you're out there, Pat. And I appreciate you coming on and sharing the different experiences throughout your life. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. I will mention, though, that I do plan on setting up some trail cams up there. I know I've heard that they tend to not show up on trail cams or something like that, but people use them as a deterrent. That's what I think I've heard over your show or other shows. What's your opinion on that?
I think that they do avoid them. Why, I couldn't tell you. And the reason why I think that, a lot, you'll find on people's property, and I'll tell people, buy the cheapest ones you can. The cheaper, the better. And they tend to back off when you start putting up trail cams. And again, why they do that, I don't know. Because we seem to capture everything else on a trail cam for the most part. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, too, like, I don't really feel threatened by it, because if it would have wanted to do some, it, my two dogs not dead to rights, you know. So I'm not really worried about making it as a deterrent. You know, I'm just trying to figure out a way how I could, like, try and capture evidence of it type thing.
I gotcha. Well, let me know if you get anything with the trail cams. They are captured on trail cams, but it's very rare. It's very, very rare. And a lot of times it's the last second, you'll get a shoulder, you'll get half of a head, you'll get that sort of thing. But I really do think that they avoid the trail cams. And again, I can't give you a great answer why they avoid them, but they do.
Okay, well, thanks for your input there, Wes.
Yeah, absolutely, Pat. It was a pleasure talking with you, man.
It's a pleasure talking to you, too. And thanks again for letting me come on. And hopefully some other veterans out there that have seen this big black dog will come forward and you know, share with the rest of us what they may have seen, so we can try and maybe deduce what this creature, entity, whatever it may be, is.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks again, Pat, for coming on.
Oh, you're quite welcome, Wes. Have a great weekend.
You too, Pat. And that's it for tonight, everyone. Remember, if you've had an encounter, shoot me an email. My email address is wes@sasquatchchronicles.com. If you get a chance to check out sasquatchchronicles.com, you can become a member and get additional shows. Until next time, everyone.
Save me from myself, let me drown. sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Barton, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.